This is The Record with Steve Scherer. I'm Ross Reynolds. Walter Kern is a novelist, perhaps best known for the book Up in the Air, made into that film with George Clooney. Walter Kern's latest book reads like fiction, but it's not. Blood Will Out is about his association with a man who called himself Clark Rockefeller, as in Rockefeller Center. Turns out Clark was not a Rockefeller, not an American. He was a murderer. Walter Kern, welcome.
Great to be here.
Getting into this book is pretty interesting. You were living in Montana. You were running for Time magazine, and you were asked to drive a dog across country to this man, Clark Rockefeller, a man you had never met before. What possessed you to do that?
Well, I'd spoken on the phone with him. The Humane Society was run by my wife, and they'd gotten in this crippled dog that needed a wheelchair to get around. They'd put it up for adoption on the internet, and they had been contacted by one Clark Rockefeller of New York City, who said, I really want the dog. The problem is I can't drive out to get it. I don't have a driver's license, and my private plane is in China with my wife. I talked to the guy on the phone, and he was a big eccentric and outlandish character who called himself a freelance central banker. That's what he said he did for a living. And I thought, I've got to meet this guy, and hey, maybe I'll get a donation for the Humane Society. And so I set out in my truck to deliver the dog personally.
He never really said he was one of the Rockefellers, but you assumed he was.
Well, I mean, how many are there? It's not a common name. Even Kennedy is more common. And if you heard him speak and you heard the affected way he spoke and the stories he told of the sort of high life and the influential people he knew, you too would assume he was one of the Rockefellers.
You talk about his extravagant, emphatic phoniness. Could you flesh that out for us? What kind of things did he do?
Well, he sounded, I like to say in the book, he sounded like a cousin of Katharine Hepburn. You know, he sounded like he was born in a private club, and he had one of those lock-jawed Upper East Side accents. When we went out to dinner in New York the first night I met him, he pointed out the window of this skyscraper private dining room at Rockefeller Center, and he said, "Would you like to take a tour of the family's place?" And then he patted his jacket pocket and said, "I have the key right here, the master key." Now, somehow we didn't get around to it that night, but the next day at his apartment, I saw his art collection, which looked like it was worth $60 million, maybe 70. Who knew? Pollocks, Rothkos, de Koonings, all over the walls.
At one point, you were having some tax problems, and he had a phone number for you to call.
Yeah, this is maybe the height of the absurdity that I experienced with him. I was visiting him up in his mansion in Cornish, New Hampshire. I mentioned that the IRS was going to dock me for $1,000 or something for my unpaid taxes. And he said, "Well, we can solve that problem right now." And he wrote down a phone number, and he said, "Here, call George. He'll pick up personally. His secretary, this doesn't go to his secretary. This is his private line." And he met George Bush Jr., the president of the United States at the time.
Did you call the number?
No, I thought if I call this number, I'll get on a list of some kind. And I also thought when George Bush Jr. gave Clark this number, he didn't mean to have him handed out to friends. I'll get Clark in trouble. I mean, that's the strange way I was thinking with this guy.
Well, this is as much a story about you as it is about this guy. Write that Clark's extravagant, emphatic phoniness, which you've described, actually demonstrated his honesty to you. How?
Well, you know, I like to say if I'd never met a rich person, I wouldn't have fallen for this guy. But because I went to Princeton, because I went to Oxford, because I'd hung out with, you know, these sort of dynastic types, I knew that they can be really kooky, really isolated from real world concerns. And in a strange way, because he was so odd, it struck me that that had to be genuine, that, you know, he'd grown up with nannies in private schools, isolated from usual and normal concerns, and that was why he was so strange.
You met him in 98, and you knew him for many years on and off. You say in the book that a writer turns his life into material, and if you're in his life, he uses you too. And yet, you didn't write about this odd character, probably the most unusual person you ever met. Why not?
Well, when I set out to meet him in 98 to deliver the dog, I thought, I'll end up writing about this guy. Once I did meet him, he was very concerned with privacy, very concerned with his security, his personal security. And I thought, I can't burn him that way. I can't write about him. But in 2008, when he was exposed as an imposter and as a criminal and as a suspect in this grisly murder in which the victim was cut up into pieces and buried in his mother's yard, all bets were off. And my killer instinct as a writer returned. And I thought, okay.
Walter Curran is telling us about his new book, Blood Will Out, the true story of a murder, a mystery, and a masquerade. Your first reaction to the news that this person you knew as Clark Rockefeller was accused with murder was just complete disbelief, right?
Well, it was total disbelief. It was, in fact, denial. I thought, these Rockefellers, what cowards they are for disavowing this man. He brought shame on the family, and now they're throwing him under the bus. It was really only a few days later that it finally sunk in. He was truly not one of them, and I was truly an idiot and a fool. And in a few weeks, when he was named as a suspect in this murder, I realized that he was probably guilty of it, because certain details of the murder lined up with things he'd told me inadvertently. And it was like my chair fell through the floor into the ocean, and, you know, I just went into another dimension of disbelief.
He didn't stop his gaming of you even after this, even after he was on trial for murder. You got a chance to talk to him in his jail cell, and one of the things you asked him was why he deceived people.
Yeah, I asked him why he deceived people, and I asked him how. I mean, he wouldn't admit to the murder. He continued to blame it on the missing wife of his victim, who he probably murdered as well. But I said, you know, all that aside, how did you con people for so long? Tell me the secret. And he said, it's very simple, Walter. Vanity, vanity, vanity. You play to their vanity.
And did he play to your vanity?
Absolutely. I didn't realize how much vanity I had until he started playing on it, you know?
Where do you suppose he found vulnerability in you? I mean, he showed an intuitive sense, because you obviously were not the only one who was fooled by him. He had an almost innate sense of figuring out where that vanity is and where to push the button.
He was a great poker player who can read your gestures in your face and see what your personality consists of. He knew that I was a sucker for a good story. He knew I was the kind of guy who will tell a story to himself to sort of bridge the facts and inconsistencies around him. He also knew that I was socially insecure. I grew up on a little farm in Minnesota and went out east, and I didn't feel I was treated all that well when I went to Princeton, for example. And now I was getting my own back, hanging out with a Rockefeller. He knew, because he was that way too. He was so insecure that he had to pretend to be a Rockefeller. So he knew from insecurity, as they say.
And yet, even before he was accused of murder, your star began to rise, and his star apparently was not going anywhere. You became more well-known and more successful, and it sounds as though the power dynamic shifted a bit.
Well, it did. You know, I was walking on the beach last year as I was writing this book and trying to figure out what it was really, really about. And I came running home to my girlfriend and said, this is about a writer getting revenge on a con man. It's about a writer succeeding while a con man who gets reality and fiction confused falls apart.
The levels of the con were just amazing. When you talked about why he deceived people, he tailored his answer to you. He knew you had substance abuse issues.
Yes.
You figured this out later.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I deceive people because I'm like a drug addict. And you kind of figured out he's directly playing you in that answer.
The first question I asked him when I saw him in jail, and remember, I'd last seen him, you know, sort of in a bow tie and a blazer looking like a Clark Rockefeller, and now he was a convicted murderer. And he was kind of Jeffrey Dahmer-ish even. He was so gruesome in his crime. And I said, why should I trust you at all, Clark? And he said, well, lying for me was like an addiction. It was just like a drug addiction. And he knew I was a recovering alcoholic. And I didn't buy it for a second. But, you know, the longer I talked to him, the further into my mind he got. Even after I knew what a phony he was, what a killer he was, I was still susceptible to some of these techniques, and that's described in the book.
Walter Curran, do you feel as though you settled the score of him deceiving you for all those years by writing this book?
No, I don't, actually. In the age of Twitter and Amazon and Facebook, he's reaching out, I think, electronically under various guises. I think he may have gotten his hands on a smuggled cell phone in jail and making a little fun of me here and there.
Really? What's he saying?
Well, there are a lot of one-star Amazon reviews that appeared very quickly, and some of them used his patented initials, CC, which he often used for his aliases. And the reviews all say, you know, I expected a book about the cunning and fantastic imposter Clark Rockefeller, and I got a book about the boring, neurotic writer Walter Curran, one star. And well, I knew he liked to write Amazon reviews before. In fact, I quote one in the book. So,
Walter, as you mentioned, you confess a weakness for cultivating the wealthy and powerful and famous. Did your experience with this man cure you of that?
Well, I have a weakness for cultivating people of extremes in all types. I mean, I live in a tiny town in Montana. So, this didn't cure me of anything except a sense of my own invulnerability. I feel a lot more modest about my ability to read character now.
Everyone can get conned, Walter Kern included. The book is called Blood Will Out, The True Story of a Murder, a Mystery, and a Masquerade. Thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's The Record on KUOW.